Welcome to News Tribune on Tap. I'm Gary Caster, managing editor at the Jefferson City News Tribune and host of News Tribune on Tap, a weekly conversation about news and issues in Jefferson City that matter to you.
Today's special guest is Justice Mary Russell with the Missouri Supreme Court. Hello, Mary.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well. We're pleased that you're here today, and we just really like the opportunity to chat with you. For our News Tribune readers, they may have seen a story we did about Mary, just kind of a profile of her in a recent edition. And in our show notes, we'll have a link to that story for those who might have missed it. The story kind of talked about her background, how she entered the legal profession, and frankly, I just found it fascinating. So, Mary, can you share just a bit of the story as to how this Missouri farm girl finds herself sitting on the highest court in the state of Missouri?
Well, I still have to pinch myself because it's hard to believe I'm here. I grew up on a dairy farm a few miles south of Hannibal. My mother was a homemaker, was one of five children. And on a day like today, I would be out in the fields helping bale hay. I usually was a tractor driver.
Yeah.
Or maybe I'd be in the garden picking some vegetables and helping my mom can and freeze some food for the colder days in the year.
Sure.
So it's something I never, ever dreamed about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my family was very traditional. I thought I wanted to be a medical dietitian and work in a hospital and
mm-hmm.
help advise people on what to eat that would be good for their health conditions.
Yeah.
My term paper in high school was, "You are what you eat."
Oh, nice.
So I'm not sure I really follow those things today. But in any event, I also had an interest in journalism and was the editor of my ninth grade newspaper, the Falcon
nice.
Flyer.
The Falcon Flyer, all right.
This was in Hannibal, of course.
Yeah.
And later went on to be a staff member, reporter for the Black and Red, which was the high school newspaper.
Okay.
And then I was a correspondent to the local newspaper, the Hannibal Courier Post.
All right.
So I would submit stories about what was happening in the high school.
Mm-hmm.
And I just got bit by the journalism bug. I really enjoyed interviewing people, asking questions, learning new things,
mm-hmm.
and then writing it in the inverted pyramid.
Oh, yes,
in
yes.
In a fashion that would be acceptable for newspaper print.
Right.
I went on to college at Truman State
mm-hmm.
in Kirksville and worked on the newspaper up there. So legal field still did not enter my horizon until when I came home one summer and I worked as a reporter for the Hannibal Courier Post.
Okay.
And my beat was the courthouse.
Oh my. That's not an easy beat to cover.
Well, you know, especially when I knew nothing about the legal field.
Exactly.
And so my job would be to go over to the courthouse and cover the criminal docket.
Mm-hmm.
I was convicting people and accusing them of, not even accusing them, but having them found guilty before they even had a preliminary hearing.
Right. Yeah.
So the nice judge set me down and was trying to help prevent the newspaper from libel suits.
Sure.
And walked me through the procedures of what happens in a criminal case.
Mm-hmm.
And it was fascinating to me, the whole arena of the law. I did some other internships. My first big internship was here in Jefferson City for the legislature. My state rep from Hannibal, I was assigned to work with him for a full session.
Mm.
And seeing how laws were made really piqued my interest as well. And I followed it up with an internship at the United States Capitol in D.C. And I guess all those experiences really made me think more about it, despite the fact that I really didn't know any female lawyers. I didn't know any lawyers.
Right.
Family or friends. And so I probably didn't know totally what I was getting into when I started law school, but I had a grandfather who always told me, get all the education you can get. And after I finished college and I had done well, I thought, well, I'll just try taking the law school admittance test and see if I do very well.
Sure.
And I did. And I had a high GPA in college.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought, what the heck? I'll just try going to law school.
Right.
I'll use that education, like maybe working for a corporation, and I'll be like away from people. I'll be not in a courtroom because the last thing I ever wanted to do was ever work in a courtroom.
Right.
Never, ever, ever wanted to be in a courtroom.
Yeah.
And look where I work today.
So
the moral of the story, never say never.
Never say never. Never say never. Well, let's go back to your reporting experience because I'm just fascinated by it. So, and I was teasing earlier when she came into her offices that I was going to slip her a job application here.
I'll take it.
Yeah. But seriously, as a former reporter and now your job as a Supreme Court Justice, what do you, as a former reporter and one who's interviewed by reporters, look for in journalists today? What do you think we could do better? What sort of news do you gravitate toward just as a consumer?
Well, you know, as we were taught in journalism classes, that every story should be balanced, that you should hear both sides of every point. Similarly, as a judge, there's two sides to every case. I've heard people say there's never a pancake so thin that it didn't have two sides. So, you know, I like to hear not only one point of view, but what's the counterpoint of view?
Right.
And so I really want to make sure that the news story accurately depicts what the true issue is and what both sides have to say about it.
Yeah.
If the story's written where it's all from just one point of view, I always scratch my head and think, but what would someone on the opposite point of view have said?
Right.
And so that's important to me, is that a news article contain all perspectives and all points of view regarding a particular issue.
Sure.
Also, my big pet peeve is headlines.
Yeah.
And I know when I was a journalist, I didn't have any control over who wrote the headline.
Right.
But headlines sometimes can be deceiving.
They can
And I know that sometimes they're written to grab the attention of a reader, but I've been burned both ways on a headline not being accurately depicting what the story was about.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and I go back to your comment about balanced stories. I think that's true. And I think there is value in that, especially because as you read the story, you get a better understanding of, even though you may not fall in the same beliefs as the person, you know, on one side of the story, you need to at least understand where the other person's coming from. Because I think that helps, whether it's to help you better communicate with the person, explain why you find some shortcomings in their position, or maybe for you just to have empathy of where they're coming from, that I think sometimes gets lost if it's just one side of a story.
That's true. That's true. Because you want the reader to make their own mind up.
Right.
And as a reporter, we didn't want to have our opinion portrayed in the article in any way whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard. You know, every word you use portrays something about, you know, your feelings. But, you know, maybe keeping some adjectives and adverbs out makes for maybe a more balanced, an article in which does not reflect the author's true feelings.
Right, right. I've stolen the term reporter voice in there. There are a lot of times with those adjectives, you'll hear the reporter's voice in the story, their admiration or their contempt for someone, just by the adverb or adjective choice. So
true, true.
In your profile, I was really impressed with your confession that you didn't have the confidence in your public speaking initially, or the ability to advocate for someone in the court. And it just struck me that sometimes we all do kind of limit ourselves in pursuit of this American dream that you kind of also talk about in the portrait. So how did you push yourself to obviously gain the skills that put you in the position you're in now?
I think it's just basically experience and doing things over and over. When I was in high school and took my first speech class, I would get up in front of the room to speak, and you could hear my voice trembling.
Yeah.
You know, you could see my hands shaking because I was just so nervous.
Mm-hmm.
If I didn't have it written out word for word, I didn't have any ability to calm myself down to come up with the words without them being on paper in front of me.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's just, you know, having more opportunities to speak to groups and to be prepared and know my subject,
mm-hmm.
that it became easier and easier. I always use the analogy, it's kind of like riding a bicycle. At first it's hard, but the more you do it, the better you get.
Right.
Perhaps the same thing with piano lessons.
Sure.
So I guess over the years I've just had a lot of lessons an opportunity to improve my public speaking ability, which still could be improved more. But it's taken away the nerves. You know, I feel more confident. And I think sometimes maybe as a young girl, we were less confident.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully it's not true today with like my granddaughter, that she's got some confidence. But I don't know, maybe we were raised at a time where boys were superior. Boys had the big jobs, the important jobs, and we were more secondary. I never dreamed I'd be on the Supreme Court of Missouri. I'm not sure I even understood what it was, but it was a job reserved for old white men.
Yep.
And no one else needed to even think about it. And I didn't for a long, long time. So I'm just very fortunate to be where I am.
Yeah. Well, and I think there are certainly struggles there where, you know, you have the internal struggle whether I should even be pursuing that. Is that really within the realm of possibilities? But I would imagine there were countless times where you encountered, you were the only woman in the room, that it made it even more difficult to achieve that goal.
When I finished law school, my first job was clerking at the Supreme Court of Missouri. Mm. This was in 1983, and the court was 7 old white men. Mm-hmm. And even the law clerks, which are the new graduates of law school that have done well, who assist the judge in their writing and research, were almost all men. Mm. And so that's when I guess the first time I started feeling like, wow, I'm really not around many women. This is a men's field and a man's field. And so I kind of questioned then, and I questioned then when I started practicing law, how should I act? Should I act mean and gruff and loud and boisterous like some of the men lawyers were? Mm-hmm. You know, should I be ladylike? Or should I be something in between? Or maybe I should just be me.
Right.
But I didn't know what my voice was, and I didn't know how I was supposed to conduct myself in a courtroom. Mm-hmm. and with clients. It's not anything you're ever taught in law school. And so it was interesting and challenging just to kind of discover what works for me.
Sure.
And it was kind of trial and error. But I'd have clients that would come in and say, can you stand up to that attorney down the street who's like really rough and gruff? And are you strong enough to do it? And, you know, it was not really who had the biggest muscles. It was who had the best knowledge and who had the best ability to advocate and communicate for their clients in a courtroom setting or in written documents. So it was just, there were no role models.
Sure.
There was one other woman practicing law in the Hannibal area. And there was just nobody like, how do I dress? And in those days, in the early 80s, we wore suits with buttoned-up shirts, Oxford, with little tie-lets.
Yeah.
And we carried our own briefcases because we wanted to be just as strong. And right. We wanted to look just like the men.
Yeah. Wow. That would take a very strong woman to be able to do that.
I don't know if I was strong. But you know, as you said, a lot of times I was the only woman at the table, mm-hmm. the only woman in the room.
Yeah.
And people would want to know, well, what's the woman's point of view?
Yeah.
Well, I never profess that I speak for all women.
Right.
I can give you my point of view.
Right.
But I enjoyed my practice of law in Hannibal. It was my hometown. I got involved in a lot of civic activities. I was the president of the Hannibal Chamber. I was the mm-hmm. second woman to do that. And I was 29. So I was
wow.
I was pretty young.
Yeah.
But of course, at the time, I thought I knew it all.
Sure.
But I really had a lot of great opportunities in the community to help and to get involved, and enjoyed being a good community citizen.
All right. So, Mary, the courts have clearly evolved during your time before and on the bench. What strikes you as some of the biggest advances the court has made during your career?
Two things come to mind. One is the personnel, the people who serve as judges. Mm-hmm. Back when I was a law clerk, as I said earlier, it was all men, all white men. And today, our judiciary throughout the state has got a lot more diversity than mm-hmm. ever before. It's wonderful now to go to judicial conferences in the state and now to have a line at the women's restroom.
Yeah.
Before, I knew I could walk in and maybe be a handful of other women.
Right.
And the men would have a line out their restroom door when we
right.
had breaks. So it's wonderful to see more women at the conferences, more women on the bench. All over the state.
Sure.
It's wonderful to see more African Americans, more people of color. To me, it just instills more confidence with the public if the judges that people appear in front of look like them.
Exactly. They should be a reflection of the community, right?
Totally. You know, it's like, okay, maybe they've walked in my shoes. Maybe they understand mm-hmm. the issue I've got today. So that's one big change and one big positive change, of
right.
course. Another change, which again is positive, but maybe sometimes got to be careful, is technology.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I started on the bench, I had to bring my own computer with me.
Mm.
Court of Appeals, which was my first job as a judge, didn't even have any computers on their desk.
Oh, wow.
Everything was all paper, and I had a computer in my law office. So I brought my own computer with me to the Court of Appeals in downtown St. Louis. But now technology totally changed how we do our job. Communicating with other judges, with other court personnel, is probably 99% email. Originally, you would have more phone conversations or letters delivered by snail mail. You'd come back from lunch and you'd have a stack of pink slips on your desk on who called while you were gone.
All right, right.
And now it's constant, nonstop email. It's hard to keep up with that type of communication. I'm sure it's pervasive in every industry.
Sure.
But it just seems like it's too easy to email someone as opposed to picking up a phone and calling someone.
Right.
But technology, on the other hand, has been so helpful in making the courts more transparent, mm-hmm. and having the public have a better understanding of what we do. Historically, when we would finish an opinion, it would be mailed to the attorneys who were involved in the case, and then news media would cover the story. Now we, quote, publish the story by our webpage.
Right.
So anyone worldwide mm-hmm. can read the opinion that we've written and understand how we made the decision that we made.
Sure.
So with the pandemic, more technology advances occurred with our video conferencing or mm-hmm. Zoom or WebEx. It's made more courts more accessible, more participants in court proceedings because mm-hmm. they don't physically have to necessarily drive to a courthouse for a court appearance. Certain proceedings are held via WebEx, and a typical litigant could maybe walk out to their car on a break and participate in a court hearing, or go to a break room at lunch mm-hmm. or on a break and participate in a court proceeding. And so our trial judges have found a lot more participation and a lot more attendance in court hearings because of this technology.
Right.
So that's another huge advancement that's helped people gain access to justice. Mm-hmm. You know, they don't have to worry about trying to find a ride. They don't have to worry about taking off from work and losing pay.
Right.
So this has been a big sea change.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and I think you hit it right on the head. I mean, that idea that helps the transparency builds trust in the court system. They can see and understand better what's going on, as well as just the accessibility, especially among lower income segments of the population where that job is critical and being away from the job can be a problem for them. And so certainly that has been a welcome addition with the court system in the past few years. What are some of the biggest challenges and opportunities the court system is facing in the coming years?
One challenge that we need to try to make it into an opportunity, but right now it's still a challenge, is that litigation is expensive.
Hmm.
And litigation takes time. And because of those two factors, access to justice is denied or delayed for many people. So our court, in conjunction with some committees that work for us, and the committees are people that we've appointed, typically they're other lawyers, other judges. In some cases, some of our committees, we have private citizens serving on those committees to help advise us on ways to improve the court system. And, you know, one particular committee works with trying to break down some of the barriers that prevent people from having access to justice. Ways that we can speed up the process of a case so that it's not delayed, so it's not more expensive for people. Streamline procedures in both civil and criminal cases.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's one thing that's still a problem for a lot of people, is being able to have that opportunity to be heard and have their legal matter decided by a court.
Mm.
And so it's an opportunity for us to tackle that problem and make access to justice not an issue for so many people in our state.
Sure. Okay. So in 2023, you're going to once again serve as Chief Justice. Have you started thinking about what you might want to champion during that tenure?
I've been Chief Justice once before.
Mm-hmm.
It's a position that on the Supreme Court of Missouri, we rotate amongst ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
Unlike the United States Supreme Court, where the president nominates someone to serve as the Chief Justice, and that person then stays in that role for life. On our court, each of the seven of us take a turn at it. If you've been there long enough, you may get a second term, which isn't my case. It's mm-hmm. I'm getting a second opportunity. One of the themes that I carried out when I was Chief Justice before is, how can we make the courts better for everyone?
Mm-hmm.
You know, not pick it on any particular segment of litigants, not excluding people that work in the courts, not excluding people who use the courts in any fashion. So that's kind of my overarching continual theme, is how can we make the courts better for everyone?
Right.
You might have heard that when I was Chief Justice before, I did some undercover judging.
I was going to ask about that. Yeah.
So it was so much fun. You have to keep in mind, it's been like over 20 years since I stood in a trial courtroom advocating for a client, presenting a case in front of a judge. And a lot has changed.
Sure.
And of course, my memory has maybe forgotten some of the aspects of that position. And so I dressed just in plain clothes with a little laptop using SurveyMonkey. And I had some staff, and we all managed to man every door to a particular courthouse.
Mm-hmm.
And I would pick courthouses in different places around the state, urban and rural.
Right.
And our goal was to find out if people felt like they had access to justice. We'd ask such questions to everyone. Did you have trouble finding the courtroom you were to be in today? Did you have any trouble parking or getting to the court? Did the judge listen to you when you wanted to present your evidence or your testimony? Did the judge listen to both sides and treat everyone fairly? Do you understand what you need to do next? Was that clear?
Mm-hmm.
Those were the basic questions. And we asked everybody, whether they were a witness, whether they were a party, whether they were a social worker coming to testify, an expert witness, whether they were a lawyer, whether they were someone in an orange jumpsuit. We wanted to get everyone's perspective on those questions.
Mm-hmm.
And many interesting conversations. And I would sit out in the hall on a bench next to people waiting their turn to be heard in the courtroom. You know, I could just feel their fear, their nervousness.
Mm-hmm.
It was many of the people I was around, their first time being in a courthouse, not knowing what to expect. You know, I just hurt for them.
Yeah, it can be intimidating.
And one particular woman I asked, I said, are you a party to the lawsuit going on in the courtroom? She said, I don't know about you, but it ain't no party in there. So I learned not to use fancy words.
Right.
You know,
right.
Let's talk plain English
sure.
here. But then another person I talked to was there to get a guardianship for their adult son.
Hmm.
It was a very sad case in which this older couple had a son who now was, you know, in his late 20s and needed, you know, some help in managing his affairs. And so they were seeking a guardianship of him and a conservatorship. And they were worried, you know, they came to the court for some answers and some help. And the nice
mm-hmm.
judge that they met with tried to explain to them, you know, how things could be done to protect their son. And even maybe after the parents' death. And
yeah.
you just hurt for people. I mean,
sure.
we look at our cases on a screen.
Right.
And we look at legal issues. And sometimes it's easy to forget that they're real people with real problems that are waiting for answers and want some predictability and want some consistency in their life and need to know what they can do legally. And it really humanized the court system for me, again, because in our court, attorneys argue the cases. Very rarely do we see who the party is to the case.
Mm-hmm.
And it just becomes more of a examining a legal issue as connecting the dots with there really are people, humans that are affected by the decisions that we make.
Yeah, yeah, wow. Do you anticipate doing something similar to that this
year?
I want to.
There are a lot more courthouses to visit. And when
mm-hmm.
I would go, I would tell the presiding judge I was coming.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't coming to do a white glove test and
right.
inspect what they're doing.
Right.
But I was coming to learn
yeah.
and see what could the court do to improve how they are administering justice
mm-hmm.
and disclose the results of our survey with them
right.
to perfect some things that maybe needed a little polishing up. But I didn't tell anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't want to blow my cover.
Right.
And
right.
I certainly didn't tell the media. But somehow, somewhere along the line, it got out. But I wasn't doing it for publicity. I was doing it to learn.
Right.
And it was so good for me. And I really value that experience. And I think it's probably time to do it again. So I'm not going to tell you when I'm going to do it.
All right. Fair enough. We'll just be watching.
Yeah.
All right. So as we wrap things up today, it strikes me that you're a powerful role model for young girls and women today. What words of encouragement or message would you share with them today?
Well, I feel like an ordinary person in an extraordinary job.
Mm-hmm.
And I know I'm light years older than many of the young women I talk with today, but I remember being in their shoes, and I remember knowing that there's no way I could do some of those fancy jobs. I've got a picture of myself when you walk into my office in my, quote, farm clothes
mm-hmm.
with my little heifer, Mary, who was named after me, and she turned out to be a complete mess.
Uh-oh.
But I guess I would say dream it big. I did not dream big at all. I did not think, on the dairy farm, we never got to travel. Mm-hmm. So I never took a vacation. My first trip to Jefferson City wasn't until I was in high school and came with a class. Don't limit yourself. You know, if you see a door open, walk through it. If there's an opportunity offered to you, try it. Never say never and keep your options open. There's probably a career out there for you that hasn't even been invented yet. There are so many opportunities for women today that never existed before. Mm-hmm. And don't limit yourself and don't think, I could never do that, or that's a boy's job, or that's for somebody from a bigger city. I felt I can't compete with people from the big cities. They're smarter than me.
Right.
But don't limit yourself and find a good mentor, someone who's maybe in a field that you think you might like. That's a very valuable asset to have, to ask them questions on what did they think when they were my age and how would they have done things different.
Yeah.
And learning from a mentor is huge, but the sky's the limit.
Sure. Well, you know, I'm just struck also by the idea that, you know, sometimes we do limit ourselves because we never could be in that position, but also we encounter a failure, you know, and a setback, and it always strikes me that you learn from your mistakes, you learn from those failures as well. And what strikes me about your story, and maybe I'm misinterpreting this, but there were some core skills, some core values that you had that really, whether you were a reporter, whether you were going before the bench as an attorney or on the bench, that drove your desire, that desire to communicate, to advocate for people, to really understand what the community needs. And I think that would be an encouragement also, is to really examine what you're trying to do and what you want to do, those God-given gifts that you have, and then go for it, as you say. The sky's the limit.
You know, one of my favorite Bible verses is, to those who much has been given, much is required. And I don't think I probably had realized how much I've been blessed with until maybe long after high school, after college, that I know that I have an obligation to give back and to help others. You know, it's like that turtle sitting on top of the fence post.
Yeah.
You see a turtle there? You know, the turtle didn't get there by themselves.
Nope.
And I didn't get to where I am by myself by any stretch. And a lot of people have helped me along the way. And I am happy, and I get my kicks out of helping other people.
Sure. All right. Well, keep doing it, Mary. You're doing a great job. And we really appreciate you joining us today.
Thank you. It's been wonderful. Nice to talk with you.
Thanks for listening. You can find News Tribune on tap at newstribune.com, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and Google Play.